Hey, yo, welcome back, y'all, to My First Case, the podcast. Got an honor and a pleasure to bring you my guy, Lil Ronnie, Donaway's own, Goodfellas own, Borderline, shop owner.
Yep.
Definitely got to check him out. Before we start, Ronnie, let them know where your shop at, Borderline Mechanic.
I'm at 8748 Broadway, Cleveland, Ohio, 44105, and if it's broke, then I fix it. Four wheels, I get it together.
No doubt. It's a pleasure to have you here, man. And we're gonna get right into it, you know what I'm saying? You on here for a reason, you know what I'm saying? I reached out to you and I'm glad you know what I'm saying, got with us because you definitely have a story to tell.
I'm here.
And I wanna speak on some of your accolades first before we jump into your first case and how you got introduced to the system. So you did something with you had a program where y'all was giving back to the youth. I remember was it getting kids haircuts and stuff like that.
Yeah, me and China, we came up with a plan to get something back to the community. A lot of the kids wasn't able to, you know, have book bags and school supplies and. A lot of adults didn't know what to do about the situation, so we had fun with it. And one main thing we did to have fun as adults was, you know, the kickball game. You know, I did that for 6 years straight. I missed a year for COVID, but, you know, I'm planning on getting back to it. The object was to have fun, feed everybody, and whoever can donate. And a lot of people showed up and showed out every single year. It was never rough 1 year. The community stepped up and, you know, basically had our back on the situation. But when it got to a point where it got rough, you know, I continued to do what I had to do as far as my vision. And I did that paycheck to paycheck, you know.
So, so you funded it yourself?
I funded it myself, working my job every single day, taking my paycheck and making sure what wasn't donated, I was able to afford it, you know, out of my own funds. I worked for.
That's good shit, bro. That's definitely good shit.
How did you solicit the donation?
I mean, I basically Facebook and Instagram. I put it out there, and I promoted it as best as I can, and all while I promoted it. Everybody that said they was going to do something, I counted on them to do something. I think I did one thing that couldn't nobody do. Like, I brought every single project together. I went to people in those neighborhoods that I knew had clout. And I spoke to them personally and asked them to, you know, provide me with 10 people per team. I got the t-shirts, I got the bases, I got the food, you know, I got everything. And at that particular time, these cats was beefing. I'm talking about shooting at each other, you know what I mean? Like going ham at each other. And I basically set them all down at my job. We all had dinner on me at Burgers the Beer. And they settled their differences. And we got it together, you know. It was for the community, and it was for the kids. And a lot of cats that had beef with each other actually understood where I was coming from and squashed them beefs at that table. That's what meant the most to me. I was able to squash Garden Valley beef, Down the Way beef, 30th beef, King Kennedy beef. That meant a lot to me to have guys who actually was 2 months ago shooting at each other to actually sit down, shake hands, and come together with me on something I was trying to do for our community.
That is awesome.
Yes, it is. And I already thanked you, but I want to thank you again for coming to the case court, first annual kickball game. Y'all won. You got the ball. I need
every year. I ain't lost shit.
So hopefully we can put something together. I look forward to seeing you there.
They don't.
At this one, and we're going to get right into it. So, wait, hold up. I didn't introduce myself. I'm Rob Pimpton, and here's my hostess with the mostest, Keisha. So.
Yes, welcome to another episode of My First Case. So, Ronnie, let's just get back right into it. How did you catch your first case?
Wow. I was in and out with the law when I was a juvenile. I think I was like 16 when I, you know, actually got involved with the law. But I ain't get no time for it. Like, I did like 30 days in juvie downtown. And I got caught with a pistol and drugs and receiving stolen property of a motor vehicle. I got a slap on the wrist, you know. I was cool with that, but I never understood why they didn't lock me up until they had to release me. When they released me, the judge had said to me, like, you a straight A and B student. Like, you don't have a C, D, or F on your report card. How's you, you know, getting tied up in this type of mischief? But it wasn't about me getting tied up in it. It was introduced to me. You know, my mother did her best on schooling me and keeping me out the streets. I got 8 sisters, no brothers. Not a brother, but I got 8 sisters. So it was kind of hard for her to step up into a man's role, you know. So I got in trouble. They slapped me on my wrist. Probation 6 months, and I was back out on the streets. But when I went through that, I said to myself, if I can be by myself and be in solitary, I can absolutely do this again. And I wasn't scared no more, because they gave me the worst thing they could never give me besides death, and that was being locked up.
So what answer did you give the judge when he asked you, how could you, or do you recall? If not, that's okay, but I'm just curious, because you said you were a straight A student. You had never had any trouble?
No, it wasn't no man in my life. Like, no positive role model in my life. So I saw my mother struggling, and I had no other choice but to do what I had to do. That's what started me to boosting, because my mother was struggling so hard to put clothes on my sister's back that I said to myself, I know a couple of people that know how to go get it. Mm-hmm. And I linked up with them real quick.
Define booster.
I mean, I went to the mall and stole everything in it. Everything I touched, I took it.
Clothes?
Absolutely. Okay. My sisters needed clothes. Like, I got 2 younger sisters that stay in Cleveland, Ohio, that, you know, that image, you know, they wanted to keep it up when their father was in their life. But when he, you know, he went to the federal joint, he went to the penitentiary. So when he did that, you know, I felt like I was the person that was supposed to keep that upbringing. Right. So I was doing it, and my mother didn't know where it was coming from, but I looked at it, you know, like my sister shot, you know.
So you was, as you obtained these items, did you sell them, or you gave them to them so they would look nice in school and things like that?
I mean, I had a habit, you know. I got half PCP, you know, for it. So I had to keep some things for myself, you know what I'm saying, to be able to keep give me. Now, it basically gave me the heart to even go do it. You know, I mean, the shit was like it flowed naturally.
So the PCP gave you heart to
right.
So that was that a part of your routine when you boost?
Absolutely. 9 o'clock in the morning, we on our way to the mall. You know, I'm gonna go get me a dip square. You know what I mean, give me the energy and the boost and the courage to go out and do what I had to do for my family. Like, at 12 and 13, man, I helped pay light bills by, you know, any means necessary. You know?
So you was already, 12 or 13, you had already began criminal behavior. It was just at 16 that you had got in trouble with the law.
Right. Once I learned how to drive. Like, they would have never caught me if I didn't get behind the wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. On foot, I'm a mustard.
Right.
But then, you know, it takes a vehicle to go to the malls.
Yeah. So, what just off the top of your head, what was one of your best moms that you thought was?
Dillis, man, Random Woman.
Dillis, Random
Woman. That was my classic, my nigga.
So you made money off of that?
Hell yeah, did I?
Early, huh?
And what you talking about?
All right, so you spoke on PCP, but we did a little workup, so I want to give you your flowers and commend you on the fact that this man right here been drug-free for 26 years, did you say?
27
years he's been drug-free. So, shout out, bro. That's big. That's huge. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
And that's what's up, man. You know what I'm saying? Just being around where we're around, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
For you to be able to have that type of strength and to go through that. And we had spoke about something else. They wanted you to speak for some schools or whatever.
Yeah. I've been invited to a couple of schools. My homeroom teacher and my mathematics teacher, I swear to God, I love her. Miss Darby, she was my homeroom teacher, and she saw me struggle. Like, at some point in time, I ran across her in the streets, and she used to always see me moving. So she would always say, "You moving wrong or you moving right?" Like, when she saw me moving right, she let me know. When she saw me moving wrong, you know, she let me know. She was in a motorcycle gang, you know, the Omen. So me sneaking out, kicking it, I'm in a bar at 12:30 and 2 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the morning. And the next day I'm in her homeroom, you know, that Tuesday night, that Wednesday morning, I'm back in school. I never played with that. Like, my education was very important to me. So I would go to school the next day, and she'd be like, "Look, nigga, I just saw you last night, and you in school today?"
Right.
I said, "I saw you last night, and you teaching today?" Like, I love her for that. And then, if I look exhausted, she used to tell me, "Put your head down, baby, just go sit in the back. Put your head down, get you some rest before school really start." And then I got to see her, like, right at the lunch, you know, and I ain't gonna say she gave me a break, because she didn't. She stayed on top of me when it came down to me doing my work. But I felt that she did give me some kind of leniency, just on the strength that she knew what type of life I was living, and she gave me a chance.
I want to ask you, who instilled in you to prioritize your education?
My mother. Like, she didn't care what I did, really, really, for real. As long as I got up and went to school every day. Because her main thing was, if you don't have an education, then you uneducated. Like, that was her main thing about me as being a boy. The only way you can be a man is to be able to provide for you and your family once you become a man. But you won't be able to do that unless you able to have an education. So she was strict about school. Like, she never really whooped my ass. She never really hit on me and anything like that. I ain't get abused as a child, but if I got bad grades, my nigga, she showed it. Like, she showed it.
That was something she was serious about.
Very.
I want to come back to something really quick that you said when you spoke about you were boosting, but you were boosting to support your family. You were boosting to help pay utility bills. You were boosting to provide clothing for your family. Society in general tends to automatically pass judgment on people when they're committing crimes, like, without any knowledge or understanding of why. And you have people who, you know, embezzle money or, you know, do all these other big, broad, you know, crimes. But it's for personal growth, for personal gain, for personal satisfaction. I think it's important that you mention exactly why. It wasn't just because you wanted to look fly or whatever. It was because there was a need in your household and you didn't see or didn't have any other support in order to fulfill that need, and you felt obliged to do it. So basically you sacrificed yourself to the system for the good of your family. And I think that our audience need to really understand that when people commit crimes, it's not necessarily because of some malicious just bored or just, hey, let me just get out here and do A, B, and C. It's sometimes there's a reason. And that reason, although it may be illegal, that reason is legitimate. I'm not saying or justifying, hey, you know, go rob somebody, go do X, Y, and Z. But what I'm saying is, instead of looking at what, how about we look at why? So I appreciate you disclosing that. You know, I'm really telling
you. Well, what you said was a lot of, I guess I would say, politicians and people embezzling, they had jobs. Mm-hmm. Who gonna hire a 12-year-old kid to provide for his family?
That's why I think it's so profound, though. You know, when you were 12, you recognized it. You saw at the age of 12, there was a need in my household.
That made me open my eyes and say to myself, I'm gonna have to get it the best way I can. I didn't want to do wrong. I swear I didn't want to do wrong. But it came so sweet because they got a system. They beat it all the time. Some of them get caught. But I came up with a system. Like, I rarely went to jail for boosting. I rarely went to jail for selling drugs. You know, that's the stuff I didn't get in trouble for because that's what I was good at. Because I had to provide for my family. And I feel in some kind of way like Allah God, you know, slid me through just on the strength that he knew my intention. But you got other people who do wrong for themselves. I did wrong to provide for my family. I became the man of my household at a very young age. Like, I don't knock nobody for what they do. I never will. I never try to knock nobody for what they do. As long as their intentions are right. Like, my intentions stayed 100. I never really shed it off of that. Like, if I go hit a lick for my sisters, it's for my sisters. And if I need some bread and I go hit a lick and it's for me, it's for me. Mm-hmm. You know, but the bottom line was, at a young age, I was forced to do for my family. Like, I wasn't forced. I chose to do for my family. I'm not taking nothing away from my mother. Like, my mother, that's my queen. Like, solid. My mother, solid. I take nothing from her. But I couldn't sit back as a boy who wanted to be a man and see my mother struggle. Like, my mother had bought a store. I think we're going to get to the stringer. It's part of my first case when I did some time. But my mother bought a store, and I actually came home from the penitentiary and worked in this store. Stopped doing everything wrong. And three dudes came in there and shot me 4 times. You feel me? Now, the game reversed on me. Now, I'm a victim. I got shot up so I can never knock nobody hustle. Because I got in the way while they was hustling.
One thing about that, I don't consider that as a hustle. They was trying to rob the store?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Well, me, Rob, you know.
Oh,
me,
you, man. Okay. All right, so, all right. That's a good segue to me asking this question. So, which one did you prefer, boosting or drug trade?
I prefer boosting. Like, once you out the store, you ain't gotta watch your back no more.
And, that's fair. And did you have a clientele with sales and things like that in Booster?
That's why I was able to put everybody in the projects together, because I sold everybody down there, you know, clothes. Like, they would listen to me because I had a communication with them. Hell, you want this shirt for $40, nigga, you better listen. You know, $80 shirt, you getting it for $40. It is what it is. So I had a rapport with the guys that I hung out with in every neighborhood. And I was able to walk through every neighborhood, even though I'm from 40th, I was able to go down in Longwood. I was able to kick it in King Kennedy. I was able to be on 30th. And, you know, everybody down there was beefing. Like, I was able to kick it in the Valley. I was able to kick it up in Morris Black because I had what they wanted. And I got free passes. I swear to God, I walked through King Kennedy through a shootout. Them niggas stopped. Oh, this nigga got clothes, man. Put your shootout. Absolutely.
That is profound.
No, he putting a little something on me.
No, I'm not. Man, I have nothing.
So what, you must have had a bag full of polo then?
Did I? A pillow bag. You know what a pillow bag is, man.
Yeah, the big bags. The big bags.
Two pillow bags.
Okay, yeah.
Me, Tammy, and Missy. Man, they stopped the shootout. This nigga got clothes.
Right.
You know, so that was, you know, that was kind of my hustle. That was like my main hustle.
All right. Cause that's so. I want to know. So, what case did you catch that led you to the penitentiary? What was your first case that you did some time, that real time?
It wasn't real time. It was the situation. I don't know if y'all know or not, but in the '80s, on 84th and Quincy, it was a bar called The First Page. And I fell out with a couple of people from the neighborhood. And I wound up fighting with one of the guys. And his people was inside the bar. So I ain't going to say I got out on them because I don't want this dude to come back looking at me crazy or whatever. But we worked. You know what I'm saying?
You already said it, bro.
But when he came back out with, you know, my very first girlfriend's family. And they jumped me, you know. And in the process of being jumped, one of my partners, my partner, like, from birth, like, my nigga KJ, Fat Cat, he pulled up in the process of it happening. And he jumped out and he fired the gun. Little girl, I swear to God, like, I talked to her or whatever, but she got paralyzed in the situation. Mm-hmm. She got shot in her neck, you know. And when she got shot in her neck, at the same time, he got stabbed in his shoulder with a screwdriver. And when we went up to the hospital for him, me and my nigga E.I., rest in peace, when we got up to the hospital, she came in on a stretcher. I didn't see no blood, right? Like, I ain't seen no blood whatsoever. And I kept saying to myself, like, that's the little girl staying next to the bar. So I walked over to E.I. and I said, man, that's the little girl staying next to the bar. E.I. said, you know, she got shot. I said, how you know she got shot? He said, I seen her when she fell. So I wound up doing 13 years for that, you know. And I didn't have nothing to do with the shooting, but I was 18 years old. I didn't know the system, and I pled guilty to accessory. So they gave me a year.
Hold on 1 second. Can you define, you said they jumped you. Define jump.
About four dudes whooped my ass.
Okay.
About four dudes. Like, he went in there basically and told them, he out here disrespecting y'all cousin when he was the one disrespecting her. So he went in there and gave that lie. And what started the situation is when I walked up, I'm telling him, like, man, that's your girl and that's a woman. You shouldn't be putting your hands on her.
And what was she to you again?
That was my very first girlfriend. Cousin.
Okay.
You know, I was just leaving her house, walking to the store for her.
Uh-huh.
You know, teenage love. And
your first one.
Not my first
one. I had to do that.
She I was her first. I don't know. I may have been her first, but you know, I told him, like, you know, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a woman. You shouldn't be beating on her or whatever. And he got offended. And me and him bumped heads and we threw punches or whatever. And I'm trying to get her back to her family house. And her family come outside and whoop my ass.
Although you stood up for her?
Absolutely. They just knew his side of the story. They didn't know mine.
They had numbers too, so they really did.
What do you mean by numbers?
more people. I mean,
right. Yeah. I mean, I accepted that ass whooping. I didn't pull no gun or nothing. Like, if anybody know Lil Ronnie, yeah, I stayed strapped. But at that particular time, I didn't feel no need for that type of violence because I knew the situation was misunderstood. Not only do I got love for the guys that put their hands on me, you know, I had love for myself. I didn't want to go to jail, but it happened.
So you saying you pled guilty for accessory, and the accessory was related to the young lady
accessory to assault,
paralyzed.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have an attorney, or was it a court appointed attorney?
And I couldn't afford no attorney. It was a court appointed attorney, and if I know what I know now, I wouldn't have never, that was my first felony. Like, that's the first thing that stopped me from being able to carry a gun right now. And I got a business. That's the first thing that stopped me from doing a lot. Like, that deterred me from even wanting to establish credit or be a part of this particular system. Like, that really deterred me. I got a felony.
Okay. How much time did you get?
I did a year. I did a year. I did a year just for being there. That's it. I didn't do nothing to that baby. She was 13 years old. Straight A student. Catholic school. Right down the street on 83rd, she went to a Catholic school. And she was like a piece of gold. 93 FM. Everybody raised money for her. They bought her a house. That affected me. Because when it came down to it, they looked at it like, we giving up all this money for her. What's up with this justice? So I ain't gonna say I was a victim because I wasn't, but I would say that it fucked my life up. I don't want to say that because if that young lady, I apologize to her. Like, the first time I came home.
You actually spoke with her?
She was braiding my sister's hair on the front porch. And at that particular time, I had hair. And when I pulled up, I didn't even get out the car. I pulled off and went and bought her a dozen of roses and a card. My first time seeing her since I've been home from the penitentiary.
Although you didn't have anything to do with her.
I didn't have nothing to do with the shooting.
Did you tell her that? Did you talk to her about it?
Absolutely. When I pulled back up with them roses and that flower, you know, them roses and that card, I told her, like, if you ever need anything from me, let me know. She said, I need my legs back. And it fucked me up. Fucked me up. I didn't take her legs from her.
That's a low blow. And did you tell her that?
Yeah, I did.
Did she receive that? Like,
she received it, and she accepted it. You know, and
but you carried it.
No.
Good.
No, because she wouldn't let me feel guilty about what happened.
That's amazing.
And at the end of the day, I chopped it up with her. I let her know how beautiful she was, you know. And I think she braided my hair like 3 days later. She, you know, she accepted the situation more better than I thought she would. But that was my first case.
Do you still interact with her? Have contact with her?
No, I don't. You know, I haven't seen her since the last time she braided my hair. That was my first case.
Where did you do your case? Where did you do your time at?
Oh, man, they threw me straight in the jungle. I swear to God, Lancaster.
And so,
talked about that on here before.
That was in, like, I think it was like 89.
Is
that the place where you go for your first time? Or is that like Lorraine?
Lorraine is reception. No, I think you're confusing it with Lorraine, but
okay.
Lancaster was one of the rougher joints for, and it was a primarily younger demographic in there, and so they were still ready, trying to go. A lot of, I know what you're getting.
Swear to God, you know what I told them? after I did my year, I think I had like 5 days left. And this one CEO I couldn't stand him, he was a white boy from Columbus. He had said to me, like, you'll be back, basically. And I told him, like, man, fuck you. I got another 5 in me. I swear to God, 11 months later, they gave me 5 years.
I was good with
that. I swear.
What was it 5 years for?
Man, all kind of shit. Like, if I get caught with a kilo of cocaine, get the fuck out of here. This ain't you. This ain't your M.O. If I get caught doing anything, this ain't your M.O. But any type of assault, I'm done. I got 28 felonies.
So what were you, how, or what crime did you commit to go back to do those 5 years? What specific crime?
Assault, aggravated assault, aggravated robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. You name it.
Was this all one case, one incident?
No.
So you piled all them up in 11 months.
Getting out on bond.
Okay.
Beautiful mother. Getting out on bond. Catching more cases. I mean, yeah.
So you did that.
You can Google the shit.
You did that time and got right back to it. So you came home from Lancaster, like,
straight
right back at her.
I mean, that's the grand.
But you was young, though, so you was young.
Right.
So you hadn't, do you think that the first conviction,
no,
it didn't.
No, yeah. No. I had a ball.
It didn't deter you. So, did you see that CEO again?
Yeah, hell yeah. He smiled at me.
Oh God, I want to punch him in the
face. He smiled at me. I was cool with it. Like, yeah, motherfucker, you told the truth. You know, but I said to myself, you know, the devil will laugh.
So you ended up back in.
Yeah, I went straight back to Lancaster.
Why? Because were you on parole or?
No, I caught new cases. I did my year flat out.
Oh, so they just happened to send you back to Lancaster?
I mean, Lancaster at that particular time, they basically said that's like gladiator school.
And that was for the younger guys.
So yeah, like wild little young niggas.
Yeah.
I mean, so, but in that particular time, at that particular time, I had caught another case in there. You know.
Speak on that. It wasn't another assault.
Absolutely. I caught another assault case, and they took me outside for court again. They didn't give me no more time, but they upped my status. So the last 2 years of my 3 years and 6 months, which at that particular time was 5 years, I went to Mansfield.
Isn't that like the worst?
No, I wouldn't say the worst place. Penitentiary is penitentiary. Every one of them worse.
But I remember hearing, like, Mansfield is where murderers go or something.
Murderers, yeah. That's like, you know, that's like, they used to call Lancaster Baby Luke, but Mansfield really Baby Luke. You know
Luke,
what?
What do you mean about Luke?
Lucasville Penitentiary in Lucas County.
What is Lucasville? Like what?
23-hour lockdown, nigga. Shower, telephone, sit back down. That's Lucasville. But Mansfield was a little bit more open to where you can, you know, move around a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And basically, you ain't free, but you have more freedom, you know. You got to move around a little bit better. But I went from a penitentiary to where you was able to be around everybody, open floor. Everybody got bunk beds, cubicles, mm-hmm. like an office. Okay. But you just slept in it. To leaving there and going and being locked in a cell, a 6x5, you know, and no 6x4. And I think that was one of the worst things they can do to a human being.
Okay, let's get into that. Because I was going to ask you, how did you adjust mentally, spiritually? Like, even during the first time that you, when you did that year, like, how did you orient yourself? How did you cope? How did you adjust?
I mean, I found my faith. I found God. Like, the thing before even getting to being locked up like a animal, I did 90 days in the hole.
The hole? Define the hole.
The hole is where it's just you.
Solitary confinement.
By yourself. Nobody to talk to. Your shower there, your toilet there, your sink there, everything. You never leave that room. Like, they give you like 20 minutes to go out and have recreation, but they ain't nothing.
And you're still solitary.
You're
still
caged.
Just, yeah, it's just you.
Caged. When you go out for solitary, you caged. It's just a cage. You know, and this was really a cage when you go out for rec. Like, I'd rather not go to rec because I was so used to being 90 days strong in these four walls. And I was cool with that.
How did you become cool with that?
Because your man going to death. You have no other choice. You ain't got no way to even kill yourself.
That's a good answer. I got a question. When you found your higher power, was there an awakening, or was there an incident, or was there something that just drove you or just told you, like, let me, you know what I mean? What, did you get tired, or do you remember?
No, mentally, it messed with me, but being a survivor, I coped with it. But when it came down to it, all the answers that I got to be able to cope with it came from somewhere, you know? And I actually looked at that like, well, somebody guiding me and keeping me strong or something. You know what I'm saying? And my grandmother, very spiritual, Bercy Hale, R.I.P. But she used to always tell me, trust in the Lord. So, 90 days, my nigga, you gonna read as much as you can. And being in solitary, only thing you was able to get was religious books or religious items. You couldn't read, you know. You couldn't get none of that other stuff that people was able to get. Yeah. None of that.
They actually put restrictions on what you are able to.
Only God. That's something they can't, you know, deny you of. Mind you, I was on Lucasville riots jumped off. So they didn't have room in regular solitary. So I was on death row. I was on death row my 90 days. Because they didn't have enough room because they rolled so many people from Lucasville to Mansfield because of the riots. So I didn't even have the privilege of being in regular confinement when it came down to being disciplined. These dudes across from me had TVs. But by me not being a death row inmate, I'm just there. You know what got me through that? I used to steam up the shower and write on the window to the guy that was about 10 feet down just to get a conversation.
So y'all held the whole conversation and on the window?
Steam, my nigga.
What?
That helped me. That helped me because these dudes destined for death. I got like a year and a half to go. 2 years, you know. But these dudes on death row, they got their TVs, they got their snacks. I had nothing but that steam in my finger and me being able to spell to have somebody to talk to. Because it meant, you know, it's a mental thing. Absolutely.
So after that, after you came home from the 5-year bid, did you return to prison or was that your last night?
Well, wow. After that, I went out with a couple of guys that I kind of trusted. I was cool with. I'm not blaming them for nothing. What happened. But, some shit jumped off at a bar. I was involved. I don't feel that I was wrong for what I did, but I feel I was wrong for not taking control of myself. I caught 18 months. I fought the case. I took it to trial. Yeah. Like, I took it to trial, right? Like, all the way. The system was kind of fucked up because not near one of the people that I wanted on the jury got selected.
That's the problem.
What was the case for? What happened though?
It was aggravated felonious assault, my MO.
So what charges? A fight broke out at the bar?
A fight broke out. We left the bar. One of the guys ran away. He got away. But I allowed one of the guys to drive my vehicle because I was fucked up, Rob. I got hit in the back of the head. I'm leaking, you know. So I ain't want to drive.
What do you mean by leaking?
Leaking mean like blood was coming out my head.
Oh. Is this a bar that some of our people should be familiar with?
This bar got shut down because of that.
Because of the incident? Okay.
That's why I had three prosecutors. Because I closed down a public place. They wanted 20 years.
What?
They asked for 20 years. That was the cop out.
So you had to go to trial, shoot.
Yeah, I took it to trial. And,
when you said that you didn't get the people on the jury that you wanted.
Man, everybody was old as fuck. It made my peers. They can't understand where I'm coming from. It was only one person on there that was in my age bracket. But the fucked up part about it is all 12 of them was white.
See, I'm going to inject something that's currently happening right now with voter suppression. That's one of the reasons, and I'm going to make sure I'm really close to the mic right now, that we need to be registered to vote. So, because in order to serve on the jury, they pull the pool from registered voters, okay? If you're out there and you're not registered, you need to register. So it has an impact. Not only is it a way to express yourself and your political views, but it's also a way to ensure that there's a balance when it comes to individuals being prosecuted for crimes. I'll leave it at that.
How did that work out? How did
I mean, I took it all the way, Rob. I boxed it up. Now, my finger, y'all can't see my finger, but I lost the tip of my finger, and my job paid me for it, so I was able to get a lawyer this particular time. And he hired another lawyer who specialized in robbery and assault. And we back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The victim, her and her husband, well, they went and got her from her job and made her come testify. And she said on the stand, "I don't even believe that's him." Really, that's reasonable doubt.
Really, real quick, did you fight this case from the county or were you out on
the county? She is.
Was in the county while you fought the case.
Because I was running for 7 years for a case. They kicked in my door and came and got me. It's on that most wanted poster. Remember I posted
that
shit?
Yeah, I seen that,
That's what that case was. Okay. Yeah. So they came and got me. Like, they didn't give a fuck about the drug case I had. They ain't look for me for that. But when it came down to the aggravated robbery, yeah, we about to get this nigga. Mm-hmm. And I ran for 7 years on that drug case. But when I caught the robbery case, it came, my nigga.
Yeah.
It came. Bass. Like, I wasn't even out 3 years and caught that case. The drug case.
Okay.
And about 3 months later, I caught the aggravated robbery case, and they came and got me. Like, they weren't bullshit when they came either.
Alright, so back to the bar. So, you leaking, head busted, dude gone in the car.
No, I'm on the passenger side.
Oh, you in the car?
My vehicle.
Oh, you in the bar?
It's just that I had blood in my eyes, blood coming down my neck. We get to his house, he snatched my keys, I run upstairs, go get his pistol, jump back in the car, take me back down to the bar. roll the window down, tag in my name, aim out the window. Nigga, you ain't about to do that in my name.
Wait.
You stopped him or you?
I stopped him.
Okay.
He was finna shoot the crew.
Hold on, you're leaking. What about going to the hospital?
This dude ain't care nothing about that. He got his ass whooped like me.
What problem was it?
That problem, it's shut down now, but it was on like 130th and St. Clair. Queen, some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They shut that down. That bar never opened after that night.
Oh.
They labeled it violent. And then she sued me.
The bar owner?
Yeah, she tried to sue me.
Oh, okay. How did that case work out?
They gave me 18 months for theft of a motor vehicle.
But you said she sued you, so that would be a civil suit.
Exactly. Nothing. I ain't got no money.
Right. So I'm confused. No, I'm not confused. So you did, this was the case that you were facing 20 years, but you only ended up coming out doing 18 months.
Man, I swear to God, Rob, they stopped the trial. They stopped the trial and the judge removed the jury and said, I would like to talk to Mr. Hill. He said, do you see what's going on? I said, yeah. I got 12 jurors, all of them over 50. None of them my age, but one. He went to CSU. He was the only one of my age, my only peer. All of them was white. The judge pointed that shit out to me. He said, Mr. Hill, is you willing to work out something with the prosecutor? I said, if the prosecutor willing to work out more than 20 years, he came with 5. I said, man, I ain't about to do 5. Call the jury back in. It was going to be a mistrial, man. My lawyer walked over to me and said, would you take 18 months? I said, absolutely. I already had 3 in. I'm already in the system 3 months in the county. I said, hell yeah. Come on with that 18 months. And I took it. Even though I had it beat.
But first so 20 years, why gamble? I mean, who want to gamble with
there
that type
you
of
go. There you go.
20 years.
There you go. There you go.
But you said you felt confident.
If it would have been a mistrial, they could have brought it back up. And they could have got more solid on me. Like, I ain't want to play with my freedom like that. 20 years, if I lose, it's that 20 years with a tail. I ain't want that.
That type of jury and all that.
So I snatched that 18 months up and ran with it. I did my time. I did take the truck. But I didn't do it the way they told me. Never said I did it. Like, I took it the way I told my lawyer I took it. I never lied to my lawyer about none of it. That's how I was going to be able to beat it. Because I told the truth. I didn't do it by gunpoint. And that was their main thing. I jacked somebody.
Jack meaning?
Carjacked. Took them out their car. And that bullshit. No, the car was running. They locked the fucking keys in the car.
And do you, so, all right, so, all your prior convictions, do you feel like you could, like, 18 months, I can do that easily?
Hell yeah, that ain't shit.
Yeah, so you was kind of seasoned. You think that seasoned you?
My nigga, I done played softball in the summer, football in the winter, read all the books I can read, like, what people don't fail to realize. You take every situation in stride. Like, to me, it was a lesson. Like, I learned how to speak more than one language. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I learned how to accept people for who they are. I learned how to deal with all types of shit. But the worst thing I learned how to do is not get caught again.
Go in depth on that a little bit. What you was building with other criminals who were more seasoned, had more skills. Or
you already know. Ain't nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, I never get caught for certain shit. Because what that nigga get caught for, you ain't going to catch me for it. I'm going to do opposite of what he did. Like, that's the fucked up part about this system. they'll take a motherfucker and put him with a killer for theft. You going to jail for theft, but you learn how to kill a nigga. Mm. You ain't got nothing but time. You gonna think about every conversation you have. That's all you got is time to think about it. Like, that's the fucked up part about the system.
So how was your adaptation with killers, though? You say, I mean, you got a lot of assaults. You was boosted, but it's safe to say you not really a killer.
No,
so
man,
how is it coexisting with motherfuckers who really, really kill, and this is what they do?
Well, in Mansfield, you got motherfuckers who doing 250 years to life, to, like, it's different. When they know you going home in 2-3 years, they don't really fuck with you, but you got some motherfuckers who are just kick it with you just on the strength, you cool people or whatever. But you got motherfuckers who got double life. Like, they, if they die and be reborn, they get locked back up. Like, that's how that go. Like, nigga, you came out your mama pussy again? Come on, nigga. You got another life sentence to serve.
That's a lot of time.
Right,
that's
so
a whole lot of time.
That's very loud.
When they figure, you know, when they figure out that type of situation, they really don't fuck with you. But you got some cats who just like to vibe with you. Like, I used to play chess a lot, dominoes and shit like that, spades and tuck or whatever. Them dudes are actually tell you how they committed their crime. Yeah. And you looking at them, and your last words is, "That's how you get caught?" I wouldn't have never did that.
Oh, you deserve to be there.
Right. I wouldn't have never did that, my nigga. Right. Yeah. I wouldn't have never took that approach to the situation.
Yeah.
Like, that's just me. Like, every murderer I talk to, like, dude, a microwave? Oh, you put your mama head in the microwave?
Okay.
In your house? Exactly. Shit like that.
Yeah.
That's, I would have never did no shit like that.
Yeah, that's right, just now. An example.
You see
me over here. No, it's just, like, it's just
anxiety attack.
Yeah, I get it.
No,
though,
the shit that it. The shit that you hear in the penitentiary is really crazy. Like, how people assassinate motherfuckers and then leave the pistol. Like,
right,
like a lot of dumb shit.
Dumb shit.
I wouldn't have did that.
You said you learned other languages. What other language did you learn?
Arabic. I learned Arabic. I learned the alphabet. Like, I practiced Islam. My first bit, I still wasn't on it. Yeah, I got 8 months left. I ain't worried about that. But that damn nickel, I found God. And being, you know, being confined to myself for so long and being in a cell finally, how you would say it, you know, I read a lot, and I studied the religion. I studied the attribute. You know, I came to understand that, you know, Jesus is a prophet, you know, and I came to realize that God is God. So I figured out how to separate the two. You know, anything that ever walked this earth is not above me, you know, and a lot of reading, because that's what I did. I didn't work out, you know. That's why you see me right now as frail as hell. I didn't work out, you know. Nothing, one of my bits, I worked out. I worked my mind. I exercised my mind more than my body. I came to understand that it was something better than me. And I feel I found it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm alive today, because I felt I found what was good for me. I don't not what nobody, you know, believe or what nobody think. I came to understand my understanding, and, you know, it worked for me.
No doubt, no big facts. And my analyzation is, you exercise your mind because of your upbringing. And that's part of what was in you, like you spoke upon your education.
Man, my grandmother used to take me to church, bro. Used to scare the shit out of me. The Holy Ghost, like, I'd be looking like, "Mom, what's wrong with grandma?" So I know it was something spiritual running through my blood, because I actually saw it happen. Mm-hmm. But I never knew what it was that was happening to her. But the way I'm taught and the way I teach my kids is, you know, God is there. It's just you gotta accept it. And I ain't wanna accept it the way my grandmother accepted it. You know, falling on the floor and all that stuff. So the way I accepted it is the way that I saw it. You know, and it is what it is for everybody. I don't like nobody religion because it's only two religions, good and bad. Like, if either you gonna be good about living or you gonna be bad about living. And then going with saying that, it's not nothing bad that you feel is right. Like, it's just a big contradiction when it comes down to religion.
I am so grateful that I've learned so much from him.
Man. Like, I'm the most quietest person you ever meet. I swear to God, I don't talk to people. I really don't. I don't like talking to people. But, like, I can be in a room with 1,000 people. They never know I was there. Like, that's not my MO. I don't want to be seen. I don't really want to be heard, you know. I don't want my presence felt until I'm spoken to, you know. I really feel that's one of the reasons why I know a lot or understand a lot, put it like that. And I don't know a lot. I'm knowledgeable about what I know, what I studied, what I came to understand. But as far as knowing people, it's because I didn't want to talk to nobody. I just wanted to listen.
Yes, and sir.
Sometimes I'm not even in the room. But I'm in the room. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to understand how to talk to people, how not to talk about people, who talk about who, and, you know, angles. Uh-huh. I learned angles because I listen. I've never been in an in crowd. Like, this the most intelligent conversation I've had in the last 5 to 6 years. You know, the only relevant conversation I had in the last 5 or 6 years is with the woman I'm about to marry.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's going down July 17th this year. But I never was able to talk to nobody that I was involved with. I never understood nobody I was involved with. That's how I know I'm in love.
What was it about her that made you feel that this has to be it? Since I'm not really, as you said, comfortable. I don't know if it was comfort or just that choice. But how did you come to the conclusion that this has to be the one? Because
she gave me a chance. She heard what I want to do with my life, and she backed me up on it. Like, I told her what I wanted to do. I told her, you know, I wanted to own my own business. I told her that I wanted some money. I told her that I wanted to provide for my family and hers as well, and I do so. Like, the majority of everything I do, when I wake up every morning, that's what I do it for. You know, I'm not selfish at all. Like, what made me start my business is because I seen how so many young black women or single women was getting treated when it came down to, you know, being able to get back and forth to work, you know, getting their cars worked on. Some of the prices I be hearing is ridiculous to me. And I say to myself, well, if I ever get back in that game, that's something I never do, you know, to my people or to no other race, period. Mm-hmm. You know, so I did it for 11 years as a kid. Right. I left that alone and I went, you know, started getting, you know, regular jobs. But the opportunity knocked at the door when I was able to get the shop that I got now. So by me having the shop that I got now, I refuse to hurt anybody the way I seen my sisters being hurt.
So you're a mechanic.
Very good.
Okay, and what's the name of your shop?
Borderland Auto.
And the location?
8748 Broadway. That's in town.
You have a phone number or something?
216-355-6287. Bill Ronnie all day.
Okay, I'll be there when I have a problem.
You finish breaks?
Cut it out. I done pulled motors and transmissions, man.
That's awesome.
Never been sued.
What about a tie rod?
Cut it out, Rob.
Okay. Oh,
you gotta have some fun with this guy. This is my guy right here.
I tell you, as a woman, I'm very grateful to hear that because you automatically feel vulnerable when you have a car issue. You just don't know what to do, where to go, if it's right, you know, to pay, whatever, even if it's, you know, inflated just because you have kids or whatever you need to get to work. You need to, so,
not this kid. I don't get into that. Like, I like to be fair with everybody, and then there be some situations to where it's not affordable for everybody. And if I feel it's not safe, you know, God willingly, you know, I come out my pocket and do the labor for free. But I do ask that you bring that bread back.
That's business, though, man. You know. And through the course of this interview, I just noticed that you create great karma. You know what I'm saying? And,
thank you.
I commend you for that. You know, you do a lot of things that create great karma. So it's going to come back no matter what. You know what I'm saying? I commend you for taking a step.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your future wedding.
Thank you.
I hope to be there. Or,
oh, no, you there, man. Don't cut it out.
I'm just saying.
Rob, cut it out. All right,
you know, but
we done sung in the basement together, my nigga. In the house that I just bought.
Yes, with the pool in the back. Porsche truck. You doing good, y'all. So, I just want to commend you, man. You know what I'm saying? So,
thank you.
You know, you did have a few trials and tribulations, you know what I'm saying? And, that was that, you know what I'm saying? And, your life is moving forward. And that's great. So, do you have anything that you would like to tell the youth that's coming up?
Absolutely. Like, this is one of my real reasons why I'm sitting here. Like, regardless of whatever you went through in life, whatever trials and tribulations, you might have my story. I mean, not the same story, but similar to my story. It happens. Us young black men mainly accept the role as a father at a young age. And when we accept that role, you know, we strong, we bullheaded, we broke chains. You know, that's hard to do with your wrist. But, like, growing up and taking on that role of responsibility, you still got to give your parents a chance to be able to be your parent. Don't feel that everything fall on your back, because it don't, because you still have a parent. You still got a mother. You still got a father. Might not be in the same house, but in some kind of way, co-parenting do work, because I do it now. But the main thing is, don't think that it's your responsibility to take care of everything. Sometimes, let go and let God. Like, my youth, you the future, and you better stay strong. If you don't stay strong for yourself, how can you stay strong for your offspring? Do everything you're doing to help your parents, but don't get in trouble doing it. Like, that's the main thing. Shouldn't nothing push no one to commit a crime or violate the law to get what you gotta get for your family. My nigga, young lady, I collected cans, I collected bottles, I did this, I did that within the law. I just wanted a little bit more. At this particular time, there's plenty ways of doing things to where you won't get yourself in trouble. Right now, time's really hard. Just make sure you do everything within the law if you want to help your family. Exactly. That's the main thing.
I would also say, keep in mind that if you do something that puts you in a position where you're in a law, you actually causing stress. You take it away from your family.
Exactly. And that's a great question, because I was just about to ask him, do you think that your incarceration, you said you were able to do it because you learned how to tell your family, your first bit, your juvenile bit, like, oh, I can do this. But when the incarceration became repetitive, do you think it affected those people that were free, like your loved ones, your mom, did you see an effect, or just
give us another thing? Absolutely. Like, my mother didn't have a house phone, so my neighbor did. My mother paid every single phone call that was made from the penitentiary. But that phone got to get walked next door. That's a lot of stress on the person that's bringing it next door. And Nita, rest in peace, Auntie Nita used to take that phone to my mother every single day. Like, I didn't want for nothing in the penitentiary. Like I said before, I got out the joint. My mother bought that store in like 4 or 5 houses. So I'm eating, I'm good, but I'm still doing grimy shit. You know, I'm in there kicking locker boxes, taking jewelry off people's necks, because I still had that neck just to be that nigga. You know, so, and wasn't nobody in the penitentiary running the penitentiary unless you was from down the way. So I was, you know, I was with the big wigs. You know what I mean? Like, niggas, we ate breaks together. My nigga Be Good Smoke. My niggas, yeah. Chip. Yeah. My niggas, we ate. Right. You know what I mean? But I was one of the niggas that said, fuck it, I'm still gonna do what I had to do. Crazy part about it, man, and this is no lie, my mother sent me $400 a week. I left the penitentiary with almost $10,000, man. Right? When she got that store and started eating, my mother was sending me $400 a week. I didn't need it because I still felt that I'm a man. But when it came down to it, all I had was me. And my reputation, trying to be me, trying to do what I needed to do to survive. Fuck it, it is what it is. But this is what I want to say. I would not, and I repeat, I would not take back one day of my life. I don't regret shit.
Lessons, huh?
I don't regret shit.
So you learned, it made you a better person?
It got me closer with myself. And like, you see me, I'm damn near tearing up. I'm a sucker when it comes down to it, for real, for real. But at the end of the day, I think I'm a prime example of what a man should be.
Oh God, definitely. I agree too, man. Early, you know what I'm saying? And feel free to, you know, express yourself and be. It is what it is, man. And we definitely thank you for sharing your story in the rarest form, you know what I mean? And just for being here, you know what I mean? Because your legend is your legend. And we just want to give it back to him, you know what I'm saying? So hopefully everybody can get something from you.
That's why I'm here, man.
No problem. I wanted to ask, so that last 18 months, was you done? Or was that it?
I'm about to tell you something, man. This is the honest to God truth. My daughter right now, she's 32 years old. My second oldest daughter. My oldest daughter, 37. My second oldest daughter, who life I've been in since she was born. My older daughter, I just found out she was my daughter about 10 years ago. And I still haven't met her yet, but I know she's my daughter because of Tess. But my daughter, when I came home my last 18 months, she said to me, I said, you know, ain't you happy to see me? She said, yeah, but is you going back? Is you done? And at that particular time, my daughter was about 17, 18 years old. Like, she had a voice. And she said to me, like, ain't you tired? Ain't you tired of leaving me? None of my other kids said that to me. But my daughter said that to me the day I came home from the penitentiary. Like, I'm saying to myself, like, I don't know if I should check her or respect her. But, you know, at the end of the day, I respected that. And she was tired of seeing her father leave. And that was my last time going to the penitentiary.
Okay, so why haven't you let your oldest daughter?
Well, I talked to her over the phone after I found out she was my daughter, and she basically said to me, like, you know, I'm married now, you know, I have a life, you know, I got a husband, and it is what it is. I ain't salty about that. Like, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Like, a couple of kids, that's man. Two of my kids I found out about 10 years later or years later. You know, and I don't get involved in what I didn't know. I didn't know. And I reached out, you know, and I asked that child if she wanted to hang out, meet me, see who I was for herself, you know. But that was a decline. And I'm fine with that because I didn't know. Okay. But if that child ever needs me, you know, I'm dad, I'm there. I take care of all my kids. Every single one of them, I take care of all my kids. Every one of my child, every one of my kids graduated college thus far.
How many kids do you have?
Seven. I got three more to go as far as graduating in college. My son played for Shaw football team and basketball team. He the quarterback for football. He the captain of the basketball squad. My other son, Denim, that's my baby. He the youngest. Very good in school. I had to get on his ass a few times, but it is what it is. Then my youngest daughter, KK. You know, they're my three babies, and I ain't pushing them, I'm guiding them into getting an education.
That's very well put. I'm about to pride up you. So, when you came home from your bits, I'm just going back a little bit. Did you continue in the drug activity? You said you smoked PCP. Did you continue with smoking weed, or did, what was, when did that? When did you get
down there? Man, I came home one night from the Amber, Club Amber. I'll never forget this night. This is what made me, you know. I came from the Amber, and when I went in the house, before I went to the house, I thought somebody shot me because I heard a gunshot. And at that particular time, I was doing dirty shit. You know, niggas was chasing. Niggas wanted some get back. Niggas wanted they shit, you know. Niggas wanted my head. So, it might have been somebody tire busted or some shit fell on the ground, but I heard gunshots. But by me being high, I couldn't distinguish the situation. So I took off running. Like, I stayed on 83rd. The ambulance was right up the street.
It was on 83rd, wasn't it?
No, it was on 89th.
Oh, 89th.
So from 89th to 83rd, I hauled ass. Ran in the yard, and I just knew I got shot. My legs was tired, so that's what I thought it was, you know. My sister and about three of her friends sitting on the front porch. Please forgive me, Cassandra, Barbara, all y'all. But when I ran up in the yard, I immediately told my sister, like, somebody just shot me. And she said, where? And I'm so motherfucking ad rob, I pulled my motherfucking pants down and my drawers. Now I'm in the yard with Ding-a-ling.
Oh,
around my sister with her friends. My sister jump off the porch, search my body, don't see no blood, and immediately turn around and say, "Mama, this nigga high."
So did you have a reputation for being high around them? Or
yeah, I got naked all the time.
You said naked?
All the time. Yeah. I take my clothes off all the time. You know, that's what I like. PC and P.
And P?
PCMP.
Okay, what's the other P?
PCP and pussy.
Oh, okay. Why did
that was my thing. Why? So I'm really trying to fuck.
Yeah, so
that's why did I ask that question?
I mean, you know,
I ain't want to see.
No, it's okay. I think it's important.
It's important
for us to know.
That was my main objects about, you know, some of the things I did. You know, the not bras on. And my sisters, they had some bad ass friends. So my thing is, okay, whatever. Any little way I can, you know, I did it. But when I did that shit, man, my mother, like, nigga, go upstairs. Don't go to your room. Go to my room. So I'm like, okay, then, cool. It is what it is. I'm high. I'm tough. Then the motherfucker. I go in her room, sit on the bed. Yeah, she about to come up here on that bullshit. Whatever. Man, she came in that motherfucker and jumped on my chest. Like, why would you embarrass your sister like that? I'm like, well, you know, I'm kicking it. It is what it is. Them bras like that shit. And I said it like that, and my mother said, so when you start cussing around me? I said, bitch, get off of me.
Yeah.
My mother got off of me, went downstairs, when they got her friend Charlene, big, burly black bitch came upstairs. Charlene jumped on my chest that time. Dragged me off the bed, got on top of me, held me down. My mother had this little cabinet. It was one of them cabinets that you turn and both of them lock at the same time. She opened that motherfucker, and I knew that's where she kept her pistol at. She grabbed her 38. She loaded that motherfucker up, put that boy in the head, cocked it. Charlene, let me get my boy. And she sat on top of my chest, and she put her gun in my face and said, call me another bitch I keep. That was the last time I got out.
Okay.
That was the last time I smoked water in my whole entire life.
Were you afraid that you think she was going to really kill you?
Hell yeah!
That'll sober you up, so I'm good.
Sober?
Yeah.
My nigga, I ain't get had no more.
That's what's up, though.
Man, I ain't play with peaches. Peaches don't play. They used to call it Pistol Pete.
So it's safe to say, we're talking about the kids and all that, so it's safe to say you were somewhat of a ladies' man, too.
Man, hell yeah. Yeah. I ain't no ugly motherfucker. Then I had them braids back then.
Yeah. And you put it on so you like to dress. Right, you know, right.
I was a booster.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, so, that's what's up, man. You know, it was a pleasure having you on here. Mm-hmm. Case you got anything else you want to go with?
No, I'm just so thankful for it. All of them.
More than welcome.
Wow,
like, my thing is, like, I do got a story to tell. Like, y'all ain't get the head for it. Like, my best friend Tammy,
she said she gonna
write a book about my life. Like, she know my life, so I ain't really even got to sit down and talk to her about it. But I do, you know, want my story to be heard, because when I was young, I struggled. And I didn't have shit. Like, I wasn't used to shit until I started getting in the streets. But I won't say I was forced in the streets. I chose to get in the streets. But when I got in the streets, by me being alive is a testimony saying that I did the streets. You know, everything I ever wanted in life, I never got out the streets. Everything I'm getting now in my life,
that's crazy, right?
I worked for it. Like,
you are telling me, man, you didn't get it from the streets.
Yeah.
But you learned some, you got lessons from the streets, is that safe to say?
Hell yeah. That's what got me where I'm at now. Like, man, I've never acquired what I have obtained in my life right now than I ever did in my past. Like, all the wrong shit I ever did don't come half to what I'm doing now.
Now that's what it's all about. We want to say thanks for being here, Ronnie. We got Borderline Shop owner, future husband, good fella,
Hold on, shout out to Felicia. Felicia Jackson, about to be Miss Felicia Hale. All right.
So what's the plans on the last night? Is gonna be hell or is y'all
going? Oh no, she's going up? Hell. My ex-wife used her last name. This motherfucker belonged to me.
So it's straight hell.
Oh hell yeah. Hells, hell yeah.
That's the homie. Shout out to Felicia Jackson. Congratulations on what y'all got going on. You got a good guy right here. Congratulations, Ronnie. Thanks for coming on my first
date. No doubt.
Maybe we'll have him back because he say he got some more to tell us. My first case signing out, y'all. Thank y'all. Damn. Hey, check for us on every major platform. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor. Just check for us. My first case. We out here, y'all. We're going to keep bringing it.
Thanks. Perfect.